This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Wall Street firms have for years been eagerly buying up single-family homes, offering enough cash to snatch them out of the hands of potential mortgage holders, and then renting them out to people. To maximize profits, naturally, these companies have been raising rents, making housing unaffordable. Advocacy groups around the country have pushed rent control measures, saying it's the only way to ensure affordable housing. People's Action has just released a memo countering the standard opposition to rent control and offering concrete examples of where it has worked. My guest is Tara Raghuveer, Homes Guarantee Campaign Director at People's Action. Welcome to the program, Tara.
Thank you, Sonali. Good to be here.
So first, tell me about the state of housing in the United States in terms of for why there needs to be a case made for rent control. Obviously, there are huge differences geographically, but have things overall gotten a lot worse?
Things are a lot worse in the housing market today than they were even a few years ago. The pandemic has been part of what has exacerbated the housing crisis, but really we are in a state of emergency. Affordable housing supply is at an all-time low relative to demand, and the situation is just getting worse. Furthermore, housing remains the most enduring and significant factor in overall inflation in this country. And unlike other goods and services, housing is not a small factor in people's monthly budgets. It's actually the largest factor, especially for poor and working class people. Housing is the largest expense they face on a monthly basis. The rent is too damn high. People can't afford it. And something urgently needs to be done to address this issue.
So let's talk about the issue of rent control. It's a straightforward answer to making housing, rental housing especially, affordable, right? If landlords are driving up rents, it's the government's responsibility, as the sort of logic goes, to step in and say, this is as high as you can raise it, or you can only raise it this fast or this much. Controlling or regulating rents is a very straightforward response to making rents more affordable, right?
Rent regulation is absolutely common sense policy, especially given the state of American housing supply and the state of the market that we are living within today. The first thing that we have to acknowledge is that the government is actually in big business with a lot of our landlords. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac do about $150 billion in business with some of the biggest corporate landlords in this country on an annual basis. And that means that those landlords are benefiting from really lucrative loan terms that are backed by government financing. And many of those loans don't come with any regulations around rent increases. And landlords are hiking the rent. They're actually hiking the rent oftentimes beyond the rate of inflation, which amounts to rent gouging. And the opposite of rent gouging is rent regulation. So what we're proposing is a common sense set of policies that would regulate rent increases on an annual basis so that tenants can maintain stability in their homes and so that the market and the economy can also be a lot more stable than the one that we live in today.
So the standard counter to any kind of rent regulation is that it's going to depress the market. You know, you get the market logic, right? You get the response from Wall Street that if you have rent control, or even for that matter, when landlords have their own associations and band together, there's this logic that if you control the rent, it's going to discourage people from being landlords or depress the housing market. It's going to discourage the building of new housing. How do you respond to that?
The first thing that we have to acknowledge is that the market today is a failure. The status quo is not working, and proponents of maintenance of the status quo are the beneficiaries of the status quo, the people who are making profits while the rest of us suffer. The second thing to say is that actually, rent regulation is the only way to preserve existing affordable housing supply. The industry says that the whole story of housing supply is a story of underproduction. And this narrative benefits their interests, right? They want more money, they want better financing in order to as they say, build more, but really to maximize their profits. We would argue that it's actually something else. The biggest factor in limited affordable housing supply today is actually the lack of regulation. We're losing millions of affordable units year over year. We've lost tens of millions in the last decade. And even that language is limiting. We haven't lost these units, right? They haven't been demolished. They haven't disappeared. Landlords have hiked the rent. So really the best preservation strategy, the best strategy to preserve affordable housing stock is to regulate the rent, because we're losing that housing stock faster than we could replace it with new units if we follow the industry's logic.
So tell me about the examples that People's Action has laid out in your memo. You point out about that cities in Massachusetts and in California, as well as the District of Columbia, and cities in New Jersey have done rent control in various ways very successfully. And of course, how we measure success really depends on who we are, right? From a success from a renter's perspective is different from success from a landlord's perspective. So let's just say we're on the side of people and we're on the side of renters. So what does success look like in these areas?
That's absolutely right. I mean, first of all, it is really important for us to acknowledge that the policies that we're promoting have a primary goal of stabilizing people in their homes, right? Housing the people is the number one goal. Anything else comes secondary. The goal of the industry is to maximize their profit. So they have an interest in saying things like rent control don't work. But what we've seen and what we study in the memo that we put out recently is the dozens of cities across the country that have implemented some form of rent regulation or rent control policy, and it has actually stabilized the community. It has not hampered the production of new affordable housing supply, and tenants and the overall well-being of the community are in a much better place than they were otherwise. The design of rent regulation policy all comes down to the details. So we're not saying, you know, rents are frozen forever. We're saying there's a reasonable rent increase cap on an annual basis so that tenants can maintain stability, can be protected in their homes. But we're also not trying to, you know, dramatically undermine the realities of the market as we know it today.
And so can you give me the details of any city that you lay out in the memo? How did they enact rent control? Did it have to go through city council or ballot measure? And then what has the impact been on people's ability to rent and even the availability of housing stock that's affordable?
Yeah, we lay out a ton of examples in the memo. Many of the cities that have passed rent regulations at a local level have passed them through their city council. Notably, these have all been passed in states where, at a state level, rent control is something that cities can pursue. There are many more states, unfortunately, where rent regulation policies are actually precluded or preempted at the state level. Some recent cities that have passed rent regulation measures include St. Paul, Minneapolis, and Minnesota, or Minneapolis, Minnesota. And on the St. Paul side, I would say the design of the policy is strong. It's a little too early to see the full impacts in the market, but there are many other places where we can start to study the impacts over time. It is notable, though, I think the important thing for us to notice, while these local examples tell us a story about rent regulation in a local context, it's not the same thing as what would happen at the federal level if we won the regulations that we're seeking from the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Actually, there's a much bigger and more substantial impact that those federal regulations could have in communities across the country, even in states where there's a state preemption against rent regulation. And we think actually the more universal the policy design, the better both for tenants and for the stability of the market, right? What we see is when these policies are limited to patchwork implementation across the country, it actually limits the potential for them to be as impactful as they could be otherwise. The business of landlords is no longer limited to certain cities or limited by state borders. Actually, a lot of these landlords function across state lines and as national or even multinational corporations.
Now, the Biden-Harris administration has said that they has said that it wants to ensure the availability of housing. In July, the administration announced actions to lower housing costs and boost supplies. What do you make of these? Are these basically, you know, voluntary measures or measures that that Wall Street would accept, or are they, you know, as you know, maybe on the right track, just not strong enough?
I think, unfortunately, to this day, the industry has dominated the conversation about housing supply. So this argument about underproduction is really the dominant argument that is sort of agreed upon by decision makers in DC and otherwise. We see decision makers kind of buying into the industry narrative that this is all a story of underproduction. The thing that
meaning that there's just not enough housing stock and they need to build more.
There's not enough housing stock. They need to build more, and they need more policy and more financing to support their building, right? That's the industry argument. It benefits them. It's very clearly in their interest to promote that argument. That argument ignores the reality that actually in a lot of communities, there is available housing stock. It's just not affordable, right? And there's no guarantee that the industry is going to offer of their own volition that they're going to make housing truly affordable. So we need a regulatory measure, right? And our argument to the Biden administration is that while some of these new construction plans are necessary in some communities across the country, more urgent and more necessary right now is a plan to regulate the market, because landlords are hiking the rent, and therefore we're losing affordable housing supply at a rate that far outpaces our ability to build new supply. And that hemorrhage is going to make it so that this urgent crisis that we face today, the urgent crisis that tenants face every month because the rent is too damn high, is only getting worse and worse in front of our eyes.
So tell me about the specific action that you're requiring or asking the Federal Housing Finance Agency to do, or asking the administration to enable this agency to do, just in terms of getting homes, making homes more accessible.
The Federal Housing Finance Agency is both the regulator and the conservator of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac do about $150 billion in business with our landlords every year. Those are lucrative loans that come with very favorable terms to the landlords, as I said before. What we're seeking is for FHFA, as the regulator of Fannie and Freddie, to actually impose a set of regulations on those borrowers that protect tenants and that aim to stabilize tenants in their home. Foremost among our demands is a demand for rent regulation. We want to see a 3% annual rent increase cap that protects tenants in their homes and limits the impacts of the rent gouging that we're currently observing in the market.
Well, where do you think the Biden administration is going to be most able to hear the demands of this memo? It is about to be an election year. I mean, it's kind of strange that we're talking about election more than a year before it actually happens. But one of the weakest things that the current president faces when running for re-election is the accusation that the economy is still out of the reach of ordinary people, and housing is so central to that, alongside things like healthcare. Would, in your opinion, advocating the memo's demands be a very effective campaign strategy for the current president?
This is absolutely a political opportunity for the Biden administration, especially as they look to their reelection next year. The American people are in pain, and one of the most significant pain points is the cost of rent. And for all of the positioning of the White House on this issue, which is in many ways unprecedented, the lack of material change in people's lives is what's going to show up with them at the voting booths next November. So, you know, we see this as a political necessity, as an urgent political priority for this administration to take on. People need some material relief, and they need it soon if they're going to believe that the federal government has their back and that this administration has their back.
Give out a website, Tara, where people can find out more about the work that you do with People's Action, get a hold of the memo themselves.
Yes, it's damhighrent.com, DamHighRent.com. We've got some of our policy analysis on that website. We've also got ways for people to get involved in our campaign by contacting the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Right now, FHFA is in the process of reviewing the thousands of comments that we organized from tenants and their allies throughout the summer's request for information process. And as soon as the next few weeks, FHFA should be briefing their director. Their director hopefully will be taking some significant action before the end of the year. We hope to see that, and so do leaders in Congress. We got 18 U.S. senators on a letter that says the demands that we're seeking are common sense and they're necessary. We got Maxine Waters on the House side, the ranking member of the House Financial Services Committee, supporting the same. So we're very hopeful that we see some bold action from FHFA, and hopeful too that it's bold action that's supported by the White House.
I want to thank you so much, Tara, for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Tara Raghuveer, Homes Guarantee Campaign Director at People's Action. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.